The three lay staring at the myriad hosts of stars, piercing the velvet cape of night.
Feldo is up to something,
Brome said softly to the two others.
I can't quite put my paw on it, but I'll swear he's hatching some plan or other.
Keeler half sat up.
Funny you should say that, Brome. I couldn't help watching Feldo tonight myself. He's being far too smug. Sort of secretive. Have you noticed anything, Tulgrew?
About Feldo? Well, he's been going about patting backs and shaking paws, grinning like a demented frog. That's not like him. He's usually a dour creature these days.
Brome listened to the guttering fire crackle gently. So, it was not only he who had observed Feldo acting oddly.
Listen, you two. I don't like it one little bit. In fact, I've been thinking. I'm going to follow that squirrel tomorrow and see what he's up to. Fancy coming along?
Keeler and Tulgrew both nodded silently. Brome clasped their paws.
Good. As soon as it's light, we stick to him like limpets.
The campfire burned down to a tiny glimmer of light on the cliff tops. Balor and Roanoke snored gently in the cart, and a soft summer wind rippled the grass. The encampment slumbered peacefully in the calm night. Only Feldo was still awake. He sat with his back against a rock, planning.
Chapter 35.
Dawnlight crept over Noonvale in a golden haze. Unused to sleeping in a bed under a roof, Martin was up and about, feeling strangely light without the short sword tucked snugly at his side. He wandered about the settlement, marvelling at the beauty and proliferation of fruit and flower, a tribute to the industrious inhabitants. Sitting beside the waterfall, he enjoyed the cool atmosphere. Perch and trout could be seen gliding lazily in the crystal depths of a pool at the base of the falls. The young mouse stared at his reflection in a shallowed inlet. The marks of the deep scratches on his cheeks were still there, and his face was thinner, though the resolute jaw was firm, and the eyes that stared back at him shone with the light of determination. He was not surprised to see Arya appear beside him. She placed her paws on his shoulders, watching his image in the water.
You are an early riser, Martin.
I could not sleep, but I see you are up early too.
Yes, I have spoken to Baldred. I have asked her to seek out Brome. What is the matter, Martin? Are you not happy here?
It is a beautiful spot.
But you must soon return to Marshank.
The young mouse flicked a pebble into the pool and watched it sink. Arya sat down beside him and patted his paw.
You and my husband Urnbo are both alike in many ways. Warrior and peacemaker, both walking different paths, but both stubborn and immovable. The world needs such creatures. Rose told me that the tyrant holds your father's sword. Is that the reason you must go? To take the sword back from him?
Martin stood up. He helped Arya onto her paws.
Yes, the sword belonged to my father, Luke the Warrior. I swore a warrior's oath to him that I would never let another beast take it from me. I was little more than an infant when Badrang stole my sword. But now, the seasons have given my paws the strength to take it back. You understand, I must do this. And I must free Marshank of slavery.
Martin thought he saw a glimmer of a tear in Arya's eye.
I understand, young warrior. The thing that grieves me is that Rose will go with you, no matter what I or her father may say.
Martin reached out, wiping the tear dew from Arya's cheek.
I will take far greater care protecting her life than I will my own.
Grum ladled creamy pale batter onto a heated stone, grunting eagerly as he watched it cook.
Grr, pancakers! I dearly do love pancakers with breakfast.
His tiny nephew Bungo stirred a cauldron furiously.
And Zoop, Uncle Grum, don't forget his Zoop!
Grum turned the pancake over.
Get out, you daft little molar! How could I forget Zoop? Yer, don't stir it too fast! You must spoil it.
Bungo's tiny paws were a blur as he stirred faster and faster.
You don't tell I how to stir soup. I've been doing it since I was not but little and pay attention to thy pancakers.
Tables and forms had been set out under the trees in the sun-splashed shade, and creatures bustled to and fro with breakfast items. Rose dashed by Martin. She was carrying a tray of hot pancakes spread with honey and decorated with pear slices and raspberries.
Out of my way, sir, or you won't get breakfast today.
Martin sprang nimbly aside and bowed low.
My apologies, ma'am. Nothing should get in the way of good food.
Then don't get in the way. Lend a paw over here.
Palin shouted across as he staggered under an immense beechwood bowl of fruit salad. Mice, hedgehogs, moles and squirrels called out the morning greetings to each other as they went about their chores. Every creature helped until the tables were ready. Little ones, scrubbed from tail to ear tip and freshly besmocked, clambered up onto familiar laps. Young ones, giggling and gossiping together, sat next to their closest friends. Old ones and parents made sure the families were comfortable before perching in their time-honoured positions at table. When every creature was settled, Urnvo recited the grace and the meal began in earnest.
Pass the barley bread, please.
Oh, it's hot. Mind your paws.
We bain't had a good pancake since grumbling away. Pass the ear, Gumbler.
Martin, would you like some fruit salad? It's very good.
Thank you, Rose. Here, try some of this maple and buttercup wafer.
Oh, yes, please. Auntie Poppy baked them. They're my favourite. Teaselpaw, can you stop Baby Bungo dipping those pancakes in the soup?
The hedgehog maid put aside a maple scone and tried to prevent the infant mole from dipping a pancake that oozed honey into the leek and mushroom soup. Bungo eyed her indignantly.
Keep those spiky paws off an oi and eat thy own breakfast, mizzy!
Grum nudged Palum as the hedgehog finished off a heavy slice of nut bread.
That Bungo be a little savage. He'd ruined a good pot of soup, stirring it like a whirlywind. I makes a special pot just for you and I. Do have some.
Palum ladled the broth into his bowl.
Thank you, Grum. Mmm, it smells nice.
And so it should, her. I made it with roses and onions and daisies and carrot and plums and turnip too. Oh, aye, good soup. And I stirred it slow, not like some villains, not half a league from where I sits.
After breakfast, Rose showed Martin round the orchard. Plums, greengages and damsons hung red, yellow and purple amid other trees bearing pears, apples and cherries. Neat rows of raspberry, blackcurrants, bilberry and red currants provided a border between the orchard and the vegetable garden. At the far end of the orchard, a crew of moles were digging around a gaunt, dead sycamore tree. Grum was helping. He greeted them with a wave of his huge digging paw.
Hey, look at I, not all but 2 day, and I'm back at work.
He explained that they were digging to bring the dead sycamore down. It would be cut up and used as stump seats around the waterfall pool. Martin immediately rolled up the sleeves of his smock and began to help. Rose watched for a while, then tossing off a headband of woven flowers, she jumped into the hole alongside Martin. All through the day they toiled. 6 holes had been bored in and around the base of the dead forest giant, and still the sycamore refused to budge. A crowd of Noonvale creatures, who had finished their chores, gathered round to watch. Grum and several other moles shook soil from their digging claws and wiped perspiring snouts.
Grr, that there old tree don't want to budge, Grum.
No, Gumbler. Nor wouldn't you if thy roots had been there for all day long seasons.
Grr, mustn't be your little winter shifting this in.
What's holding it up? We ain't digging deep all round it.
Grum vanished down a hole and reappeared spraying earth about.
Taproot! Gert fatten, that'll have to break afore she moves.
Martin took a small mole axe and climbed into the hole.
I'm going to have a go at that taproot. Rose, take all these spectators and find the longest, thickest piece of wood you can. Bring it over here and give me a shout when you do.
Rose and her party scoured Noonvale. The only thing they could come up with was a long, thick rowan trunk forked at one end. Urnvo watched them rolling it away.
Where are you taking that? You were going to reinforce the ridgepole rafter to the council lodge with it.
Rose tugged her father's beard playfully.
Martin wants it to move the old sycamore. Don't worry, we'll bring it back.
I should hope you will, though how you plan to move that big sycamore with it is beyond me.
Baby Bungo took the patriarch's paw.
Then come and watch. You've never too seasoned to learn, sir.
Martin tossed aside the axe. He had cut as deep into the taproot as the limited space in the hole allowed. Climbing out of the hole, he directed the group rolling the rowan trunk into position.
Push it over here. That's it. Let the forked end down towards me. Grum, build up some earth and stones at the edge of the main hole here. Watch out. Let the rowan slide down. Good.
The rowan trunk stood at an angle down into the main hole, its twin forks buried in 2 more holes at the sycamore's roots. Martin climbed from the hole and inspected it. Urnvo nodded.
A lever. Don't you think it's a bit big, Martin?
The bigger the better, sir. Right, Come on, every beast climb up it and perch on the high end. You too, Bungo. Every little helps.
Amid much merriment and whooping, the crowd climbed up the rowan trunk. They balanced precariously at its tilted top, hanging on to each other. Urnvo looked up at them.
There's too few. Not enough room for all up there. Get some ropes.
It was not long before Arya and the otters who had sung in quartet came hurrying along, carrying coils of stout vine rope.
This is all we could find, dear. Will these do, Martin?
The young mouse threw a rope up to the creatures balanced on the end of the rowan.
Perfect, ma'am. Tie those ropes fast up there. The rest of you, swing on the ends for all you're worth. You on top. When I give the word, jump up and down. Ready?
Every creature waited on Martin's word.
Right. Jump up and down now. Swing hard on the ropes. Swing.
The rowan dipped and bent slightly. Then a loud crack was heard from beneath the sycamore. Martin and Urnvo threw themselves on the ropes, yelling aloud to the others crowding above and below.
Jump, swing, jump, swing!
There was more rumbling and cracking from beneath the base of the sycamore. It began to tipple as the rowan bent under the strain. Rose and her mother laughed aloud as they swung on the ropes.
It's going, see, it's starting to topple.
The sycamore could take no more. With a groan of creaking and splitting wood, it crashed slowly over. The end of the rowan lever had dipped so low that it almost touched the ground. Loud cheers rang through the valley. Martin and Urnvo pounded each other's backs.
We did it! Hooray!
The moles were quite carried away and went into a wild stamping dance. Rose and her mother kicked up their paws happily at its centre. Soon every beast was dancing, singing and cheering. The great sycamore stood nearly as high as Council Lodge at its upturned base, a forest of roots, soil and rocks. By evening, a sprawling picnic had broken out along the fallen tree trunk, and strawberry cordial and waterfall-cooled gourds of cider flowed freely. Singing lustily in chorus, the moles brought out 10 of their deeper-than-ever turnip and tatum and beetroot pies, huge, deep, hot and satisfying, made in traditional mole manner, with massive patterned, shining pie crusts topping each one.
Give ye, give you, give them and give I, turnip and tater and beetroot pie. Good platters each morn and more at night. Fill I a bowl full of tasters just right. And hear from the infant voice starting to cry. Feed them turnip and tater and beetroot pie. It's good for each stomach, it's good for each jaws.